The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we start with the headline on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal. The Windmen, how Sean Meyer and Rob Creighton and their team are pushing Durham-based Windlift to augment and disrupt the fledgling offshore wind industry with its autonomous tethered drones. And this article is part of the continuing series, 52 Shades of Success, Earth and Equity. Begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline. Harvesting Wind Through Deep Tech. Durham-based Windlift has set out to augment and disrupt the fledgling offshore wind industry with its autonomous tethered drones, written by Connie Gentry. About this project, the Earth and Equity Project explores the growing awareness, actions, and accountability of businesses and leaders who face opportunities and challenges relating to environmental, social, and governance, or ESG, issues. The 52-week project will highlight what selected companies and Triangle executives are doing to address climate change, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and ways to maneuver the new world of corporate responsibilities. The potential of renewable energy is about to be unleashed by an autonomous tethered drone that harvests electricity from the wind. Durham-based Windlift has developed drones that are lightweight, mobile, and expedient, the antithesis of traditional wind turbines, which require massive steel structures grounded on concrete bases. Its 25-pound drone can be lifted with one hand and set up in a matter of minutes, not months. The setup and takedown time are probably less than 30 minutes, and we think we can get it down to like 10 minutes, says Rob Creighton, founder and CEO. Within 5 seconds of flying in a high wind setting, such as islands, deserts, or the plains, the drone is generating power that can be pulled into the grid or stored in the battery. Once it's in the airstream, you generate power immediately, he says. Mobility, ease of installation, and speed to service are compelling incentives for military applications and the reason Windlift has garnered roughly $24 million in government contracts, even before production of drones has begun. The latest drone system design, completed at the end of 2021, passed a preliminary Navy design review in June 2022 and is ready to roll into production. The expectation is that 1,000 drones can be built annually at their Durham facility, as soon as the bottlenecks in government administration are ironed out and Department of Defense contracts are put into motion. This latest design model was a long time coming for the biologist turned passionate ecologist and visionary of renewable energy solutions. More than 20 years ago, Creighton was working on a human genome project, but became increasingly interested in climate change, ecosystems, and impending threats to genetic diversity. Instead of mapping genomes of species going extinct, I'd rather have my career be creating new energy systems that will allow humanity to live in harmony with nature, Creighton says. And that's how he found himself testing the first attempt at tethered drones on the plains of Wisconsin in 5-degree temperatures and 30-mile-per-hour winds. The machine could go all day, but I couldn't. Next stop, North Carolina's Outer Banks, where winds and warmer temperatures were ideal, but experimenting on the coast was short-lived due to repeated citations from officials that the technology could not be tested there. Eastern North Carolina farmland seemed like fertile testing fields, but the fabric wings on those early drones were easily damaged by gnarly roots and prickly cotton crops, and that, coupled with a post-hurricane explosion of mosquitoes, led Creighton and his company to the Triangle, circa 2008. It was a fortuitous move since fundamentally Windlift is a deep tech company grounded in digital engineering. We've pioneered a unique engineering process where we basically make a digital twin of what we know about reality and test everything against that before we do anything in hardware, Creighton says. It's machine learning. We're writing iterative algorithms that will allow the machine to get better optimization of the design. Not to be confused with AI, the machine learning is, quote, guided by actual human intelligence, unquote, explains Chief Operating Officer Sean Meyer. AI could not replace a human in our process right now, But the digital tools enable one engineer to do the work of hundreds of engineers in a compressed time frame. Using the lightest weight materials feasible, think carbon fiber and fiberglass, the current model uses 95% less material than traditional wind turbines, is modeled to handle 100 mile per hour winds, and follows a figure eight flight pattern, effectively eliminating the need for a slip ring component that is commonly used in rotating devices but is expensive and failure prone. Flying in circles would also cause the 400-foot Kevlar tether to become twisted. In addition to working with the Navy on a ship-based system, Windlift also designed a system for the Marine Corps that would deploy to remote locations. It provides power for communications, computers, water purification systems, everything they need to operate on a beach for months, Creighton says. And it could be an important piece of strategic deterrence in the South Pacific. Solar is a great source of renewable energy, but if the solar panel can see the sun, anything in space can see the panel. Tethered drones are not visible to satellites, and anyone close enough to see the drone can also be seen by the drone system, he adds. If China decides to become aggressive in the Indo-PACOM theater, this technology could be a great way to support our allies. There are applications for disaster recovery as well. And working through the same government channels, Windlift connects into the Army's Corps of Engineers and FEMA. They are also talking with international partners that face similar defense and disaster recovery challenges, including the UK, Royal Marines, Australia's Marines, Indonesia, and the Philippines. In recent weeks, Meyer says they've been exploring how this technology could transform, augment, and disrupt the offshore wind business. There are multiple applications in existing offshore leases that go unused because the ocean bottom conditions aren't right, or they couldn't fit as many turbines as needed in a particular area. Our systems could supplement these projects. Currently, less than 0.5% of North Carolina's electric grid is powered by renewable wind energy, according to the U.S. Department of Energy's Wind Exchange Resources. With only 105 traditional onshore wind turbines generating roughly 208 megawatts annually, plans are underway for two offshore wind projects that are slated to bring more than 3.5 gigawatts of renewable energy by 2030, with capacity to serve more than 1 million homes along the coast from Virginia to South Carolina. At a National Renewable Energy Laboratory conference in Colorado earlier this month, Windlift's executive team had an opportunity to connect with other emerging clean tech leaders and potential investors. Our strategy was well received, Meyer says. And now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. A remarkable resurgence. An effort to revitalize downtown Clinton is paying off as the eastern North Carolina town with a long history and a quaint main square is seeing a resurgence. We went through a time where it was kind of a sad little town like a lot of other towns, says Deborah Thompson, who opened a downtown store focused on North Carolina-based products in 2014. But there's been a whole lot of heart put into it, she says. Clinton, with a population of just more than 8,000, dates to 1822 and is named for Revolutionary War leader Richard Clinton. But recent decades have been tough for North Carolina's small towns, and Clinton made an early commitment to the North Carolina Department of Commerce's Main Street program back in 1982. Mary Rose, the director of planning and development for the town, says the key concepts are design, you've got to look good, promotion, economic vitality, and organization. The first streetscape project was in 2000 and more followed, but it wasn't until about a decade ago that real changes began, aided by about $70,000 in annual tax revenue that helps with facility improvements and such. The city says that there has been more than $5 million in public investment since 2000, and now downtown has more than 180 businesses and organizations and 1,000 everyday employees. Every time we invested, what we have seen is the private sector invested right behind us, Rose says. The center of town is a square around the courthouse, and while there are three vacant spaces, the area now includes Royal Gifts and Fine China in what was once a vacant store, an Italian restaurant in Alfredo's, and other upscale offerings. Last Christmas, volunteers asked local businesses to dress up for the holidays, and lo and behold, they did, Rose says. It was our hallmark moment. Rose is thrilled that a tap room will open next year and that Matthew's Gifts, a town staple for more than 50 years, will move from a strip shopping area to downtown. Downtown also includes Thompson's Simply NC, which features a coffee shop and a wide variety of products from across the state. Thompson, who moved to a bigger space on the square in 2016, says revenue has tripled in recent years. Downtown's growth has helped. It's definitely evolved quite a bit. We've done a lot of beautification, added a lot of plants. We do more events, Thompson says. We're just kind of on a roll right now. Former North Carolina Justice joins NC Central. NC Central University has named a former state Supreme Court Justice as the next dean of its law school. Patricia Timmons Goodson was appointed an Associate Justice of the North Carolina Supreme Court in 2006, becoming the first black woman to hold the position. She held the seat until retiring in 2012 after serving in various roles in the state's judiciary for more than two decades. The university's appointment of Timmons Goodson follows the death last year of the NC Central's former School of Law dean, Brown Lewis. Malik Edwards, an associate dean at NCCU, has led the school on an interim basis since July 2022. When she begins July 1, Timmons Goodson will be charged with improving the visibility and attractiveness of the school of about 450 students, according to the university. Restaurant takes salty view of dogs. Despite new federal guidelines on dogs in outdoor dining spaces, a South Carolina restaurant that celebrates dogs in its name takes a dim view of the pets in the restaurant. In new guidance from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, dogs can tag along to restaurant patios across the country. It marks the first federal guidelines on dogs in outdoor dining spaces, and it comes as pet ownership in the U.S. is rising, with nearly 87 million households having a pet. Searches for places allowing dogs are up on Yelp, and around 47,000 businesses describe themselves as dog-friendly on the platform. 23 states, including North Carolina, now have laws or regulations allowing dogs and cats in outdoor dining spaces. In Hilton Head, the Salty Dog Cafe allowed dogs on its patio when it opened in 1987, but reversed its policy 2 years later after dogs were barking, fighting, lying in walkways, and stealing hot dogs from kids. "We are all dog lovers at Salty Dog, but we remain a restaurant for humans," Salty Dog Chief Operating Officer Tim Stearns told the Associated Press. Triangle ranks high yet again. The Triangle continues to find itself near the top of highly watched lists for quality of life and economic development. Raleigh and Durham rank as the third best place to live in the country on U.S. News and World Report's Best Places to Live list for 2023. The latest ranking continues a run of success for the region. The Triangle was number two in 2021. Many people who call the Raleigh and Durham metro areas home are young, friendly, diverse, and educated, the report says, going on to highlight the region's research universities of UNC Chapel Hill, Duke University, and NC State University. Raleigh also finds itself back in the top five in Milken Institute's Best Performing Cities ranking. The city of Oaks is number three on this year's list, climbing from number 16 a year ago. Raleigh ranked fifth among large cities in 2021. As usual, Raleigh benefits from the Triangle's concentration of high-tech jobs. The city ranked seventh for the number of high-tech industries. The Durham-Chapel Hill Metro fell to 29th on the list this year, down from 11th a year ago. And finally, new business in Johnston County. The newly renovated Pine Needle Square Shopping Center at 729 North Brightleaf Boulevard in Selma has a new tenant. C.J. Hendricks & Company Salon is the latest business to join the center, which underwent extensive renovations in 2021. The shopping center is being developed by AdVenture Development out of Selma, which is also developing Eastfield nearby. The business joins other tenants at Pine Needle, including Quality Finance Company, which has been in business for 50 years, and 815 Gourmet Grill, which began operations a year ago. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the top news stories. The first one written by Evan Hoopfer, VinFast switches gears, pursues SPAC route. VinFast is opting to go the SPAC route, the Vietnamese electric vehicle company planning to build a 7,500-person manufacturing facility in Chatham County recently announced it's scrapping plans for a traditional initial public offering or IPO. Instead, it will enter the public markets via a merger with a special-purpose acquisition company, casino mogul Lawrence Ho's Black Spade Acquisition Company. VinFast says that after the transaction, the company will have an equity value of above $23 billion. Asked why VinFast is changing course, a company spokesperson says current market volatility has made it so that The primary capital markets have been largely closed for the past 18 months. VinFast wants to become a listed U.S. company. An SPAC merger allows VinFast to achieve this aim during the period without the need to simultaneously raise substantial amounts of capital from investors, the spokesperson says. Recently, Pham Nhat Vuong, founder of VinFast parent company VinGroup, said he will provide ongoing support for development of VinFast business. This announcement allows VinFast to bifurcate the dual objectives of, 1, listing VinFast in the U.S., and 2, raising capital from external investors, the spokesperson says. The use of special purpose acquisition companies surged in 2021 and into 2022, but has fallen off dramatically. The allure of a SPAC versus a traditional initial public offering, or IPO, is it's much easier for a company like VinFast to go public by merging with a company that's already gone through all the paperwork and hassle of becoming a public company. Than Goh, a professor of finance in the College of Business at East Carolina University, says a traditional IPO can be costlier for VinFast, as the company would need to collaborate with investment banks and underwriters to register with the SEC, market the offerings, and establish a public market for shares. On the other hand, a SPAC can help reduce the cost of going public, Goh says. For a company like VinFast, which has high leverage and negative working capital, opting for a SPAC might be a more cost-effective choice. The transaction is expected to close in the second half of 2023. NC Brewer expands to downtown Raleigh. Award-winning incendiary brewing plans fall opening at Block 83. This story is written by Laura Brumette. A Triad-based brewing company is heading to Raleigh with its barrel-aged brews. Incendiary Brewing Company, with locations in Winston-Salem and Louisville, is opening a tap room in downtown Raleigh. The new spot will be located at the Block 83 development along Hillsborough and Morgan Streets. The space is located in the inner courtyard between the two towers, 1 Glenwood and Tower 2, and overlooks Morgan Street. On the other side of the courtyard, 321 Coffee looks out to Hillsborough Street. The interior of the taproom space measures about 2,300 square feet. An outdoor patio connected to the building will hold 10 to 20 tables of outdoor seating, a key element to Incendiary's brand, owners Brandon Branscum and John Bacon say. Customers will be able to bring their drinks into the larger courtyard as well, Bacon says. The tap room will feature 24 taps with brews across several categories that rotate often. The brewing company's reputation in the beer community is tied to its barrel-aged program. It recently won 2 gold medals at the 2023 World Beer Cup competition held in Nashville, Tennessee. Incendiary's brews include a honey blonde ale, various types of IPAs, stouts, and a taco lager. The tap room will not serve food, but plans to offer alcoholic mixed beverages in addition to beer. The brewery opened its first tap room in downtown Winston-Salem in 2018. Incendiary expanded to a production facility and tap room in Louisville last year. Bacon and Branscum chose Raleigh for the brand's next expansion due to the city's fast-growing nature. The company started looking at places in Raleigh about a year and a half ago. Finding a space that fit with the brand's customer base of young professionals and young families that also offered outdoor space was an arduous process, Branscum says. In our next article by Kaylee Thompson, Cary seeks developer. Downtown Cary could once again look significantly different in the coming years if an ambitious plan to transform town-owned property comes to fruition. The town recently put out a request for qualifications to construct a mixed-use development along Academy Street and Chapel Hill Road. The project would reshape the property that includes Town Hall into a residential and commercial space designed to blend with the growing vibrancy of the fast-growing community. Ted Boyd, Cary's Director of Economic Development, says the town aims to develop uses consistent with the development already occurring in the area and support the increasing number of people who live and work downtown. The project would likely include residential, office and retail space, public amenities, and possibly a hotel. The town owns about 19 acres that hold municipal facilities, including Town Hall, the Paige Walker Arts and History Center, and the Herbert C. Young Community Center. Boyd says the Paige Walker building would be preserved in its place. The property has an assessed value of nearly $58 million, according to Wake County property records. And now we turn to the reporters' pages, beginning with Lauren Onosorge's page on finance and tech. After ill-advised moves, agency folds. Durham's Method Savvy employees are suddenly out of work. A group of Method Savvy employees were told recently that the Durham advertising firm many of them worked at for years was closing, leaving them suddenly unemployed. Days later, CEO Jake Finkelstein offered new details on his LinkedIn page about the extraordinarily difficult decision, saying he had tried to explore options but that it was too late to salvage the company. Finkelstein was vague on details about what happened, saying the company had the right idea and executed on it, but that he had made ill-advised decisions. As a result, we were in a position where the company wasn't as resilient as we needed to be to navigate the current financial climate, the Post said, adding that when a downturn in sales hit early this year, he explored potential acquisitions and bridge financing but couldn't pull it off in time. It's the framework of a story local attorneys say they're hearing elsewhere in the Triangle of companies in multiple sectors looking for dollars to keep going but finding no one is writing checks. Multiple attorneys tell Triangle Business Journal the lending market for small businesses is difficult and soaring interest rates put some U.S. Small Business Administration loans with rates above 12%, a direct impact on firms' bottom lines. Jim Verdonik, founder of Innovate Capital Law, isn't familiar with Method Savvy's case, but says many of his clients are looking for money. Some will find it, but at lower valuations than they want, he says. Recently released statistics bear that out. Down rounds, where money was raised at lower valuations, climbed in the U.S. in the first quarter, with nearly one in five venture rounds coming in at a lower valuation than a company's previous round, according to Carta, which specializes in capitalization table management and valuation software. Method Savvy was approved for a $388,300 Paycheck Protection Program loan in 2020. It was approved for another PPP loan for $360,970 in 2021, SBA records show. Both loans were forgiven, but the money appears to have run out. Earnings show impact on SVB on First Citizens. For the first time, First Citizens Bank lifted the curtain, showing shareholders and analysts how it's going at Silicon Valley Bank, which First Citizens acquired from regulators in March after SVB collapsed. CEO Frank Holding Jr. told analysts during the Raleigh Bank's first quarter earnings call that the plan is to run SVB as SVB to maintain the competitive advantage it has in the innovation economy. SVB contributed to $9.5 billion in profits for First Citizens. For perspective, a year ago, the bank reported profits of $264 million. Chief Financial Officer Craig Nix at First Citizens projects that between now and the end of the year, SVB will see $8 billion in deposit outflows, a circumstance of cash burn. Nix said it would be offset by $10 billion in growth at its core banking business. And finally, First Horizon looks ahead after TD deal. Days after TD Bank and First Horizon Corporation canceled a planned merger that would have created the sixth largest U.S. bank, First Horizon went public with plans for $50 million of the $200 million cash termination fee it received. The cash is going to the Tennessee Bank's First Horizon Foundation, where it will be funneled back into the communities the bank serves, including Raleigh. Laura Bunn, Triangle market leader for First Horizon, describes it as a silver lining on a disappointing situation. But we quickly shifted to look forward to the future as First Horizon, she says, adding that the bank continues to operate from a position of strength and stability. And now we turn to Evan Hoopfer's page on Greater Triangle Growth. McConnell Golf may buy Wilson Course, Wilson Country Club, to vote on whether to join Raleigh Group. A prominent owner of golf courses across the region is nearing the purchase of another country club, this time in Wilson. McConnell Golf of Raleigh is in negotiations to acquire Wilson Country Club, says Christian Anastasiadis, chief operating officer of McConnell. The course sits at 4509 Country Club on the northern edge of Wilson. We have shown interest and have been in negotiations with the club, its board, and members, with a subsequent membership vote to sell to be held mid-month. Anastasiadis says, it is to note that not until the membership votes in favor, all is speculation and no further details can be shared at this time, he says. Wilson Country Club first opened in 1915 on the site that is currently home to Willow Springs Country Club. The club became so popular that it moved to its current location in 1973 to accommodate a larger membership base. The current course was designed by William Byrd and underwent a renovation in 2005 to improve the putting surfaces and modernize the course. The 18-hole course plays more than 6,800 yards. McConnell Golf, founded by John McConnell, started in 2003 with the purchase of Raleigh Country Club and has grown steadily through the years to become one of the largest golf course operators in the region. Notably, members of one of McConnell Golf's courses have the ability to play other courses within the McConnell Golf Network. The company has more than 7,600 members across its portfolio. NC's largest flour mill finishes expansion. A large flour mill, and that's F-L-O-U-R, in Wilson's Mills, recently finished a $28 million expansion that was nearly 2 years in the making. The facility, run by Bartlett of Kansas City, Missouri, is the largest flour mill in North Carolina. This expansion adds a third milling unit and more storage space for wheat, flour, and mill feed. The facility is located at 5000 Wilson Mills Road. The biggest reason that we chose to expand was really the growth of our customers in the region, says Trey Sebas, Bartlett Vice President for Milling. They've been driving the need for additional capacity. Sebas says the company employs about 75 workers at the mill, as another 8 employees have been brought on as part of the expansion. The expansion started in July 2021 and finished this April. And finally, 1,400 acres still available at Megasite. Even after landing a multi-billion-dollar economic development project, there's still plenty of room at a Chatham County megasite available for another tenant. Michael Smith, president of the Chatham Economic Development Corporation, says there are roughly 1,400 acres still available at the Chatham Siler City Advanced Manufacturing megasite. That's after Wolfspeed recently purchased 445 acres at CAM for its new $5 billion semiconductor plant that will employ 1,800 people. I understand it's counterintuitive because when you get a $5 billion project, one would likely assume that your site is filled up, Smith says. But we were able to add several hundred acres at the front, so therefore we've got roughly 1,400 acres left. And now we turn to Laura Brumette's page on retail and restaurants. Christensen sells steak in BB's Chicken. MDO Holdings of Raleigh looks to expand the concept. Famed Raleigh chef Ashley Christensen dove into the fast casual scene with the opening of BB's Crispy Chicken in 2021. Now she's leaving the brand. Christensen co-founded the chain, which now has 3 locations, alongside MDO Holdings. The Raleigh investment and management firm has acquired Christensen's stake in BB's Crispy Chicken. Christensen made the deal to focus on existing and upcoming projects with her AC Restaurants Group and Community Outreach, MDO Holdings says. Financial terms of the transaction were not released, but Christensen owned about 40% of BB's Crispy Chicken, says Doug Worf, president of MDO Holdings. When we were launching the brand, we implored her to use her name, but she always wanted the menu, especially the chicken sandwich, to stand on its own, he says. She provided us with a terrific foundation to run with. Her fingerprints will always be on this. The BB's restaurants will remain open under the same name and offer the same menu, Worf says. The restaurants are in Raleigh's Midtown East Shopping Center, Durham University Hill Shopping Center, and Cary's Parkside Town Commons. MDO Holdings began working with Christensen on the concept in 2018. Christensen won her second James Beard Award for Outstanding Chef in 2019, but the pandemic hit in 2020, drastically changing the restaurant industry. Costs of goods, construction, and labor have all increased. Stepping away from BB's will give Christensen more time to focus on her existing restaurants and volunteering and community fundraising work, Worf says. AC Restaurants owns Death and Taxes, Beasley's Chicken and Honey, Poole's Diner, Pool's Side Pies, and an events and catering arm called AC Events. The company recently announced the reopening of its craft cocktail venue, Fox Liquor Bar, in downtown Raleigh. Christensen is the chef and proprietor at AC Restaurants, and her wife, Caitlin Golan, is the executive director. MDO Holdings plans to expand the BB's concept, Worf says, and is close to nailing down a menu and business model that's scalable. Family Guy creator invests in whiskey brand. A Raleigh startup has landed growth capital and a celebrity backer, Seth MacFarlane. Next Century Spirits, a spin-out from Anavo Technologies, now has more cash and prestige to grow one of its newest products, Bear Fight American Single Malt Whiskey. The startup, with offices in Raleigh and a production facility in Zebulon, has been growing since its founding in 2018. It recently raised nearly $2 million. MacFarlane, the comedian known for the television series Family Guy, now has what co-CEO Anthony Maniello calls a big minority stake in the Bear Fight brand. He will be involved with the brand's campaigns and advertising efforts, Maniello says. Next Century Spirits has several product lines, including Caddy Clubhouse Cocktails and Creek Water American Whiskey. It partners with outside distillers and then uses its patented technology to optimize the cask finishing and filtration process. The production of its brands is done in a 22,000-square-foot facility in Zebulon. And finally, plans emerge for huge development. The first pieces of the 400-acre Carolina Springs development are under construction in Holly Springs, with plans shaping up for upcoming phases. Shenandoah Homes, the Raleigh builder behind the development, has submitted plans for a retail center inside the project. Plans show a total of 160,000 square feet of space across a 20-acre site located at 3708 Old Holly Springs Apex Road. The shopping center will feature 13 buildings in total, one of which is slated to house a grocery store. A grocer is not named in the plans, but the building would measure about 49,000 square feet, a size typical for brands such as Publix, Harris Teeter, and Food Lion. And now we turn to the On Healthcare and Higher Ed page, written by Zach Ezone. NC Senate seeks $1.4 billion to spark innovation. State trails others in commercialization, looks to narrow gap. The North Carolina Senate wants to allocate more than $1 billion to an economic development nonprofit backed by influential business leaders. In its budget filed May 15, the Senate proposes a one-time allotment of $1.425 billion for NC Innovation to support applied research within universities that could translate to commercial opportunities. NC Innovation was formed in 2018 by a group of business leaders who were concerned about the state's performance compared to others in turning research into innovation. This includes Kelly King, the former CEO of Truist Financial, who chairs a board of directors that includes leaders in both industry and academia, such as University of North Carolina System President Peter Hans. Despite billions of dollars in research funding coming into academic institutions, North Carolina falls short compared to other states in areas like new patent applications and invention disclosures. And to the extent this activity is taking place in the state, it's mostly concentrated in the Triangle. NC Innovation aims to support economic development in rural areas of the state to ensure companies created in North Carolina remain here. There's a sense of urgency to expand our homegrown innovation as quickly as we can, says Bennett Waters, CEO of NC Innovation. Waters became CEO in April 2022. Last year, it commissioned a report from Tech Economy Partners to assess why the state lags behind others in national rankings of innovation. The report found four main challenges, including an uneven level of success, with most research funding concentrated in universities in the Triangle. Additionally, the report identified a lack of applied research that can translate to commercial opportunities, an underdeveloped venture capital environment, and little regional collaboration. NC Innovation's first step in addressing these issues includes creating regional networks. The group has already signed memorandums of understanding with four anchor universities: East Carolina University in Greenville, North Carolina A&T in Greensboro, UNC Charlotte, and Western Carolina University. Bioventus sells assets, looks to slash debt. A public company in Durham is divesting some of its assets as it tries to improve its liquidity. Bioventus has reached a deal to sell its wound care products to LifeNet Health, a life sciences company with a global headquarters in Virginia. The deal, expected to close in May, includes a total cash consideration of $85 million. This includes an upfront payment of $35 million, a $5 million payment deferred 18 months, and another $45 million in potential earnout payments. Bioventus expects to net about $30 million after the deal closes, which the company will use to pay off debt. Bioventus earlier this year outlined its plans to divest some of its non-core assets to generate proceeds to repay debt. The company ended 2022 with $31.8 million in cash and $418.1 million of debt outstanding. And finally, clinical research firm named CEO. A clinical trial site operator is building out its leadership team in the Triangle after the recent appointment of its chief executive. Dustin Owen in February stepped into the CEO role at the recently formed American Clinical Research Services, or ACRS, after nearly a decade working with Wilmington-based PPD. The private equity-backed company aims to build out a network of clinical research sites that enable pharma and biotech companies to complete complex clinical studies. The organization is putting together a team based in the Triangle to support its operations. And our last reporter page is written by Kaylee Thompson on real estate. Developer targets Chapel Hill project. EB Capital Partners plans $150 million development in town. A developer is planning a large community in Chapel Hill that will feature a variety of housing types, community spaces, and retail space as the college town continues to attract big investments. EB Capital Partners, which focuses on acquisition, asset management, and development, has submitted updated site plans for its project, Chapel Hill Crossing, located where Interstate 40 meets Highway 501, near the Patterson Place Shopping Center. The community will have up to 567 units spread among apartments, cottages, row houses, and townhomes. There will also be about 15,000 square feet of retail space and several amenities, some of which will be available to the public. The site at 5500 Old Chapel Hill Road will be split by Old Chapel Hill Road, with the north side having a four-story apartment building with up to 160 units. Amenities on the north parcel will include a community garden, gazebo, fitness center, grassy courtyard, swimming pool with courtyard, and indoor community and co-working spaces with private offices. EB Capital Partners owner Ernest Brown says all of these amenities on the side will be exclusively for the residents. The rest of Chapel Hill Crossing will be on the south side of the Old Chapel Hill Road and will have a 5 to 7 story apartment building and a 4 story apartment building with up to 325 units. A parking deck will be on the first 3 floors of the taller building. There will be 23 four-story townhomes. The row houses will be 3 stories and up to 27 of them. There will be up to 32 two-story cottages. The south portion is also where the retail space will be. It will be micro retail spaces featuring 1,600 square foot bays. Brown says there will be an e-bike retail and repair shop. The company is targeting food and beverage retailers for the remaining retail space. Brown says the development is estimated to cost about $150 million with groundbreaking on track for March. The full build-out will take about 4 years and be done in 4 phases. Funding for the development will come from a combination of in-house funds, equity partnerships, and construction loans. Builder proposes apartments near shopping center in Raleigh. An apartment community is being proposed near a shopping center in North Raleigh. Williams Realty and Building Company of Raleigh has submitted site plans for 176 apartments at 10800 Durant Road near the Falls River Town Center. The apartments will be a mix of 1 and 2 bedroom units spread across 4 four-story buildings. Site plans show there will be 52 one-bedroom units and 124 two-bedroom units. The parking for the community will be surface and have 232 spaces. Community amenities will include a two-story clubhouse with a club, cafe room, co-working space, gaming room, and fitness room. Cost and timeline are unknown as Williams Realty and Building Company declined to comment. Current apartments in the area range from $1,300 for a one-bedroom unit to $2,134 for a three-bedroom unit. And finally, Pulte Group maps 200 new homes. A national home builder is proposing hundreds of homes in northern Wake County. Pulte Group of Atlanta has filed an annexation petition and rezoning application with the town of Rollsville to allow for a new residential community with 236 homes on 105 acres. The applications would bring portions of the property into the town's corporate limits and allow for medium and high-density residential zoning. The community would be on 6 lots off Rollsville Road, three unaddressed parcels and portions of 1321, 1421, and 1501 Roseville Road. The preliminary development plan for the site shows 179 single-family homes and 57 townhomes, along with 66 acres of open space. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Companies Can Learn from Bryn Amore's Leadership. Soon after the Carolina Hurricanes closed out the New Jersey Devils in the second round of the National Hockey League playoff series on May 11, coach Rod Brind'Amour showed an extra zest in his post-game locker room speech. Well, it really was not a speech, more like a short sermon noting a bigger purpose. Pacing feverishly across the locker room, Brind'Amour reiterated to the jubilant team members that the job is not done because you are making memories of your own, and that journey is far from complete. Of course, just minutes after, at the press conference, he noted, I'm just the old guy sitting behind the bench just watching this and enjoying how hard everybody is working, and together, it's a great group. While I am a Carolina Hurricanes fan, I don't follow Brind'Amour's words every time he opens his mouth, nor do I sit at press conferences on a regular basis. But I take notice of things he says after a game, regardless of a win or a loss, and many business leaders can learn from that. Brind'Amour is assertive and yet empathetic, as he was after Game 3 and the 8-4 loss against the Devils. We were no good, he said. I don't know what else to tell you. I've never seen us play like that, but I give the credit to the other team. They were on it. They were dialed in. Soon after, he made sure that the team knew Game 3 was an aberration and everyone was responsible for the poor show. The Canes won the next game, 6-1. When you listen to what some of the players say after the game, it is easy to notice that these players don't want to disappoint Brind'Amour, not necessarily in terms of winning or losing, but in terms of effort. In business, effort, resilience, and character will beat talent, skill, and reputation every time. If Apple's next iPhone made Siri even more annoying, no one would care that the iPhone 12 and iPhone 14 came with amazing features. People would switch. I get a sense Brind'Amour has been effective in creating an atmosphere of discipline and culture. Someday he may even call it the Canes Way, just like legendary UNC Chapel Hill men's basketball coach Dean Smith called his book on leadership the Carolina Way. Please don't hate. Dale Carnegie's famous words that are still being used in business schools come to mind. Be more concerned with your character than with your reputation, for your character is what you are, while your reputation is merely what others think you are. Brind'Amour seems to be teaching his team the meaning of character these days, and that character building is being noticed by many in professional hockey and outside of sports. In a way, the team is creating its own reputation. What happens to the Hurricanes during the Eastern Conference Final Series or the Stanley Cup Finals is almost immaterial. Okay, of course, I would like to see them win the whole thing again, but Brind'Amour's lessons are not just for the present. Companies, too, should aspire to create a culture with their workers and products that exemplifies effort, resilience, and character. And we're also going to read the guest viewpoint column written by Hiba Atwa, who is an advocacy and partnership manager at the North Carolina Budget and Tax Center. The headline, Election Funding Strengthens Democracy. My father, who was born in a tiny village in Lower Egypt, always says that the best thing he's ever done is make sure his daughter was born an American. To him, being a citizen of the United States means being a participant in the greatest democracy in the history of humanity. Since I was a child, he's told me the story of the day he tried to vote no on the incumbent president staying president for life. Police with guns at the polling place demanded that he show them how he was voting, and when they didn't like his vote, they ripped it up and threatened violence if he didn't change it. Casting a ballot is a sacred act. It is done on the shoulders of our collective ancestry, ancestors out of whose centuries-long subjugation and disenfranchisement were born a vow to build a system in which all people would participate in the administration of our government and the shaping of our future. This sacred act seems almost too sacrosanct to quantify, but there is a very real financial cost associated with our elections remaining free and fair. Long before you begin reading voter guides or considering candidate platforms, state and county boards of elections are working to secure the funds necessary for your full participation in the democratic process. For example, 1 week of early voting comes at a cost of 89 cents per registered voter, and experts recommend 2 weeks to ensure adequate access to the polls. That is a cost of approximately $13 million in our state. The printing of ballots comes at a cost of between 25 and 35 cents per individual ballot, while computerized voting machines are up to $3,000 apiece. Funding has a direct impact on the actual number of votes to be counted. The more a county funds on elections, the higher voter turnout is. In fact, every additional $10 spent per voter is associated with a 3.4 percentage point increase in voter turnout. But unfortunately, in North Carolina, funding for elections is not keeping pace with our growing population, changing requirements and laws, and the rising cost of delivering public services. As the number of registered voters in the state has increased, funding to the State Board of Elections has fallen behind the cost of delivering government services. The number of registered voters in North Carolina has increased by 33% between the 2007 and 2023 fiscal years, while simultaneously the North Carolina State Board of Elections budget for election administration, not including campaign finance administration, has decreased by 19%. This underfunding has a disproportionate impact on people of color, effectively, if even not intentionally, suppressing their votes. Polling place consolidations, meaning the combining of polling places resulting in fewer places to vote, driven by decreasing budgets, have led to black voters waiting two times longer than white voters to vote. Underfunded technology leads to crude methods of maintaining voter registration lists and registering all eligible North Carolinians to vote. Adequate public funding can disrupt these inequities and ensure that the ballot box is accessible to everyone in every community in our state. Adequate funding for elections does come at a financial cost, but not nearly as high as the social cost for all North Carolinians, especially North Carolinians of color, are being asked to bear by blocking the realization of our multiracial democracy and the promise that together we can deliver opportunity and justice for all. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we'll read some of the big number sections that are sprinkled throughout the paper. The first big number is 370. That's how many jobs Boston-based Fidelity Investments filled in local roles in the last quarter alone, with 200 of them in technology. And $3.5 million. The amount the Kenny Company spent on 22 acres at the corner of NC Highway 42 West and Cornwallis Road in Johnston County, Kenny develops and manages apartment complexes. Our next big number is 25,000. That's how many jobs the food services and drinking establishments industry added in April in the U.S., according to a new report from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. $15 million. That's how much Bryn Pharma recently raised in equity from 82 investors, according to a May 10 securities filing. And another number is $12 million. That's the square footage of vacant office space, including sublease space, available in the Triangle. Almost 40% of it is in Raleigh, and 1.3 million square feet of it is in downtown Raleigh, according to Triangle Business Journal's space data. And now we'll read the quotes that are sprinkled throughout the Triangle Business Journal in sections called He Said It or She Said It. The first one is Haley Huey, director of the NC State University Entrepreneurship Clinic, on her advice for young entrepreneurs. You always want to keep your eyes on your long-term vision, but really the path right now is to insanely focus on your customers, build your revenue. That is going to be your lifeline. And next, we have Matt Brubaker, president of Greenfield Communities. His company is about halfway through selling out phase one of Serenity, a master planned community in Harnett County that is slated for just under 1,200 homes. Post-pandemic, we believe consumers continue to be attracted to communities with amenity packages that feature outdoor activities. And our next quote is from Lance Trenery, CEO of Raleigh's Golden Corral, on its upcoming expansions via two new concepts. The $2 billion company is testing one, Homeward Kitchen, in Southern Pines. We have a 100-year plan at Golden Corral, and since we just celebrated our 50th anniversary in business, we are only at halftime. And in a She Said It section, we have a quote from Laura Nicholson, CEO of Humacyte, on the clinical stage biotech landing a financing agreement with Oberlin Capital Management worth up to $160 million. This really gives us optionality going forward. It also removes any concern in the near term about having to raise equity in this current market environment, which is not exactly helpful for most companies at our stage. And next in the He Said It section, we have Apurva Shah, managing partner at Jay's Properties on mobile homes, offering an affordable housing option. As we continue to see interest rates increase, compounded with a dip in the economy, there needs to be affordable housing options for people in the greater Raleigh area. And now we have a couple of stories in the Around the State news section. First one is written by Elise Franco of the Charlotte Business Journal. Massive Charlotte project about to begin. Goodbye to Uptown Cabaret and hello to new towers in Charlotte. Chicago's Riverside Investment and Development Company will soon start site preparations for Queensbridge Collective, a $700 million mixed-use project at the edge of Uptown Charlotte and South End. The massive development at 1111 South Tryon Street includes a 35-story, 600,000-square-foot office building and a 45-story multifamily tower with about 400 units and parking at levels 2 through 9, as well as 20,000 square feet of ground floor retail. These projects take 2 years to even get to the starting line, then 2 to 3 years to build and time to stabilize, says Anthony Scacco, chief operating officer at Riverside. You're talking from ideation to income-producing property, 7 years of labor. The site is currently home to Uptown Cabaret at West Moorhead and South Tryon Streets, which Scacco says is set to close in June. Midnight Diner recently moved to its new home at 420 East Trade Street near Spectrum Center. A ceremonial groundbreaking is to take place at the site on May 24. Vertical construction on the residential tower will begin immediately following completion of the site work. Riverside secured more than $250 million in financing on the multifamily portion of the project. Scacco says market conditions and financing will dictate the start of construction on the office tower, though he expects the entire project to deliver in late 2025. The availability of capital for office at scale is very limited without tenant pre-leasing, so I think we're going to be very deliberate in how we approach the financing of the office component, he says. We are in discussions with several tenants across a range of industries and are confident in our ability to lease the project despite the broader economic headwinds. And though office market conditions have recently posed a challenge for developers, brokers, and building owners, Scacco says Riverside was always confident in its plan for Queensbridge. It was always a matter of when, not if, the project would begin. Obviously, the macro conditions influence every aspect of the business plan, but you have to keep your eye on the big picture, he says. Although the conditions are difficult, Charlotte's attributes haven't changed, the quality of our site hasn't changed, and our aspirations for the product we want to deliver hasn't changed. The project was formally announced in November 2021. Riverside closed on the land purchase in December 2021. And we have another story, this one from the Triad Business Journal. Triad lands airline with non-stops. Piedmont Triad International Airport is getting a new airline and two new non-stop destinations, Nashville, Tennessee, and Orlando, Florida. Silver Airways said May 16 it will begin daily non-stop service to both cities June 30. Based in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and a portfolio company of Versa Capital, Silver Airways flies ATR 600 turboprop aircraft. It advertised fares to Orlando and Nashville from PTI for as low as $49 one way. We are pleased to welcome Silver as a new airline at PTI and to have direct service to Nashville and Orlando, which are both very important markets for us, PTI Executive Director Kevin Baker says. Paolo Mesnick, Vice President Commercial at Silver Airways, says, by connecting the Piedmont Triad to Orlando and Nashville, we aim to facilitate seamless travel experiences, whether it be for business or leisure. Daily flights from Greensboro to Orlando will depart at 3:25 and arrive at 5:50 p.m., with the other direction leaving Orlando at 7:15 a.m. and arriving at 9:40 a.m. The schedule to Nashville has departures at 10:20 a.m. and arriving at 11:10 a.m. Nashville flights to PTI depart at 11:55 a.m. and arrive at 2:45 p.m. Silver says it operates the most passenger routes within Florida and between Florida and the Bahamas from its gateways in Fort Lauderdale, Orlando, and Tampa. Its Caribbean network connects Puerto Rico with the U.S. Virgin Islands, Anguilla, St. Martin, St. Kitts, Dominica, Santiago, Dominican Republic, and the British Virgin Islands. Silver's cargo operations are launched from Fort Worth, Texas. And with our remaining minutes with the Triangle Business Journal, we'll read as much as we can of the executive voice column. The headline, She Connects Homes Families, as president of McKee Homes, Trish Hanchett, seeks sweet spots in a challenging market. Interviewed by Kaylee Thompson. Trish Hanchett is of the mindset that no matter how far along you are in your career, you can always be learning and bettering yourself. We never get to a place that we don't have opportunities to learn or improve, she says. For Hanchett, that means reading voraciously and always looking for new ways for McKee Homes to improve and expand. She's also a firm believer in women sticking together and giving each other a leg up in their careers where they can. She does this by being part of women's networking groups and encouraging her female employees to build relationships with other women in business. Hanchett says many of McKee Homes' land deals have come from relationships she's developed with fellow women over the years. She has been president of McKee Homes since 2019 and has spent all of her career in residential home building, holding division president roles at companies like Meritage Homes, KB Homes, and Lennar. How have you navigated local land prices? We have not walked away from any deals. In the fourth quarter, we saw a big dip right in sales. That was just because buyers were experiencing less sticker shock as it related to the mortgage rates. We actually stepped our plan back this year just because we didn't know what was going to happen and we wanted to be conservative. That allowed us to feel comfortable about our land positions through 2025. There was less urgency on trying to fill that land pipeline. We were able to be a little bit more selective and focus on where we wanted to be. But we are a little bit different than some of the other builders, and being a small builder in North Carolina, we can do some of the smaller deals and we can do septic deals. So that opens up a lot of opportunity for us. How have you adjusted to the current residential market? I always say the blessing of home building is it's not monotonous. It's probably in the last couple of years, maybe it's been too non-monotonous. I mean, just a lot of challenge last year with all the supply chain issues, not being able to get people in their homes, extended cycle time, walking in the shoes of our customers. That's one thing I think we really focus on because last year was really an angst-filled year for a lot of customers. And they were having to readjust their lives with extended closing dates, that type of thing. Last year was one of the best things we did was we actually put somebody in the role of backlog concierge to reach out to people who had been in our pipeline for a long time and be proactive. And we're going to go ahead and stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.